President Donald Trump on Thursday said he's picked former pizza chain executive Herman Cain, who ran for president in 2012, to take one of the open seats on the U.S. Federal Reserve Board. A decision on the nomination, which would need Senate approval, is not final. Cain made his fortune as CEO of Godfather's Pizza before running for the Republican presidential nomination in 2012, which Mitt Romney ultimately secured.
It's like a Fitbit for horses. This prototype sensor is designed to monitor horses' vital signs, to improve performance, reduce the risk of injury, and detect diseases which could prevent unnecessary deaths. The sensors are positioned on the neck, leg, and skin to check the horse's heart rate, temperature, and blood pressure. Monitoring equipment for horses is nothing new, but the university says that existing tech typically doesn't work when the animal's moving.
The family of Samia Stumo, who was killed in the Ethiopian Airlines crash last month, is suing the airline, Boeing, and the manufacturer of a part of the aircraft that's under investigation. It's the first lawsuit filed on behalf of a U.S. victim from the Boeing 737 MAX crash in Ethiopia, and the first to also target the airline and parts manufacturer Rosemount Aerospace Incorporated.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's April 5th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for tuning in this morning for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We appreciate your business this morning, and we'll try to give you your money's worth with lots of good stuff this morning on the program, including Paul Nolte, who's here from Kingsview Asset Management. We're going to keep Paul for the whole hour today, and in the second half of the broadcast, he's going to take some of your questions about portfolios and the economy and money. So stay tuned for that this morning. We'll bring in Paul momentarily. Also today, we'll keep you posted, obviously, on the latest news, weather, traffic, and more, sports, too, and all of the market news, too, coming up this morning. So let's get at it. The WGN Associated Bank Market Desk is where we'll start. The trading week winding down after Boeing shares sent the Dow up around 150 points on Wall Street yesterday. This morning, futures are pointing toward what looks to be a positive open on Wall Street, with Dow futures up about 29 points. S&P futures are up almost a quarter of a percent. NASDAQ futures up almost a quarter of a percent. Around the globe this morning, markets in Europe are a little bit higher, but not by much. In London, just a fraction. In Germany, just a fraction. In France, up by nearly a quarter of a percent. And in Asia, where some of the markets are closed today for the Qingming Festival, those are the markets in Hong Kong and China. We can give you the numbers from Tokyo, where the Nikkei is going to end the day up about 83 points, or nearly a third. Oil is trading at $62.09 a barrel, which is down about a penny. Some stories that we have for you as we begin this morning. The premier of China says a new consensus has been reached with the U.S. on the text of a trade agreement. China's official state media reported the development after yesterday's White House meeting between President Trump and the Chinese vice premier. During an earlier photo op, the president said a trade deal could be coming in the coming weeks, could be completed in the coming weeks. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos will keep 75% of the company's stock, and ex-wife Mackenzie will take 25% as the pair complete their divorce. On Twitter yesterday, Mackenzie said she's happy with the settlement. It will make her the third richest woman in the United States, roughly $35 billion in a divorce settlement with her now former husband. Google is dissolving the artificial intelligence ethics board it formed only a week ago. The tech giant created the external advisory board to monitor Google's use of AI. The board came under fire when Google announced that its members include Heritage Foundation President K. Cole James. James is a noted conservative figure who has openly voiced anti-LGBT opinions and used a conservative think tank to fight against transgender rights and oppose efforts to battle climate change. Google says it will continue to be responsible in its work on the important issues that AI raises. It is Friday, and Paul Nolte, a regular Friday guest, is with us as always today. Paul is from Kingsview Asset Management, where he's a senior VP, and also a senior portfolio manager there. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Good to be back in the studio after a couple wayward weeks wandering around the country.
Right. You were out doing a little bit of travel. Well, it's nice to have you back here today. We're going to keep you for the whole hour today, if that's all right.
Absolutely. That'll work out great.
We announced that before you actually came on the radio, so we hope that's okay.
It'll work out just fine.
Yeah, so get your questions in for Paul now. You can text them in to us, and we'll do that in the next half hour of the program. I don't know where to begin this morning. I guess with the markets, it seemed to be a sort of okay week, right?
It's been a good week. The markets are, you know, slowly rising. They've covered the hurdle now of getting over the 200-day moving average. They're actually within a spitting distance of the old highs back in September of last year. So that fourth quarter swoon, we've recovered almost all of that. And I think the markets are reacting to a lot of the trade talks. You know, we keep getting dangled that, you know, it's imminent, it's close, and we have an agreement in principle and all those other things that kind of give
text agreement now.
Yeah. So I think the markets are anticipating that within the next couple months, we should have something in place. The part that is kind of a concern for us at this point is the economic data. The economic data has been actually fairly poor, and we'll get a lot later today with the jobs report. But when you take a look at it, I think investors are looking past that, anticipating that the first quarter was probably the worst quarter, and we improve from there. Earnings should be picking up second half of the year, and things will be right again with the markets and everything back in gear. So I think a lot of investors are looking at it as kind of a Goldilocks economy. It's not too hot to get the Fed really involved. It's not too cold that we're going to have a recession next week. And I think the equity markets are kind of liking that spot right now, and that's part of the reason why we're seeing them slowly rise over the last couple of weeks, at least.
Yeah, and the I remember maybe a month or so ago, the markets would react on a daily basis to the trade stuff. And now they don't seem to be doing that.
Not as much, but, you know, and there's still a positive bias to the market, and I think some of that is built into the fact that, again, we will get a deal with China. And China's economy is starting to pick up again. You know, they were certainly struggling over the last half of last year. The data points that we're starting to see the last 2-3 weeks or so are improved. And I think at the margin, at least, China is a very key and important player in the global economy. So if China is struggling, the global economy will struggle. If we can get China to continue to grow at their 5-6% ish pace that we've been used to, that will help not only the U.S. but economies around the world.
Remind us again why we got into the trade war with China. We were hoping to get some settlement on how they treat technical matters with
the proprietary information. Right. Yeah, exactly. So when a company like IBM or Dell or Cisco goes to China and says, you know, hey, we want to be able to sell into China, they have to partner up with a Chinese firm. And what has happened in the past is the Chinese firm has basically taken over a lot of the proprietary technology and used it as their own without compensation, without any authority, anything like that. So they have essentially stolen a lot of our technology for their own use. And so they're built in what they're calling their Belt and Road, which is developing out their internet and a lot of their technology. So they want to be a global technology leader starting 2023-2025. That's where that is coming from. And so they've taken a lot of that technology, and it's really at the core of not just the U.S., it's a lot of European countries as well that are affected by that. That's really the genesis of the trade war.
And we will want to see something done with that in this agreement if there is one.
Yeah, no, that is, I think really the key to it. It's not whether they buy more soybeans from us or other farm products and stuff. I think really the most important part of this is the technology and what do we do with the proprietary information on the tech side. And that's the part that we really want to see. Otherwise, it'll be a toothless agreement, and I think they'll continue to do what they have been doing in the past. If the flip side to this, or kind of the twist, if the Chinese economy picks up here, there's a little less incentive for them to bow to the U.S. Right. The Chinese economy, having done poorly, kind of was under the gun. if they are able to turn things around here a little bit, and they've done a lot in the banking system and put a lot of money into the economy, if they can get their economy going, there's not as much a need to partner up with the U.S., and they can go it alone.
Paul, it is Jobs Report Friday. Last month, we saw 20,000 new jobs. We're looking for a little bit better news this week.
We are, and we're looking for a revision because the expectation was, and the commentary all around last month's numbers was, it's an anomaly, it's weather-related, it's government shutdown-related. So a couple things. One is the expectation is about 170,000 to 175,000. But what's going to be important is the revision number to last month's data and how much does that get revised higher. My base case on this one, or my best guess, would be that we might come in a little bit light on the jobs number this month, mainly because of the weaker economic data that we've seen through the first quarter. Again, wages are going to be a key component to this, and see if we do get a continued wage growth. And we're running now about 3.5% or so. So we're getting toward the upper end of that historical band between 2% and 4%. So again, as we talk about every month, this jobs report is the most important jobs report of all of them. And I think there's a given twist now because of the very poor numbers last month.
Is there anything we can draw from the ADP report? Was 123,000?
Yeah, that one came in below expectations. But if you look at the weekly jobless claims number, that was the lowest in 50 years. So it is kind of a mixed bag. And certainly we've talked in the past about the number of retail jobs that are lost. And we saw a lot more layoffs in the first quarter around the retail sector. It's going to be, there's a lot of cross currents that we're hearing from a lot of the data points that we normally look at. And that's part of the reason why we're taking the under, if you will, on the 175,000 new jobs.
And again, we've talked about how, as we watch this jobs report, it's going to take several months. If we're going to see something happening, it'll be over the course of several months, which is why revision and today's numbers are important.
Yeah, no, it's true. And to be fair, the jobs numbers tend to be a lagging indicator. So if let's make the assumption we're in a recession today, it's not unusual to see the jobs report actually come out halfway decent. And we see it revised lower in the future months, and then we start to see maybe in the summer where we get, instead of jobs growth, we're seeing jobs contraction. So the jobs number tends to be one of those indicators that is more of a confirming, yes, we're in a recession, as opposed to a leading indicator of being in a recession. It's one of the last things to turn, both at the bottom as well as at the top of economic expansion or contraction.
I want to mention one other thing with the economy before we hit the half-hour break here. Oil yesterday hit $70 a barrel. Should we be concerned about that?
You know, it's interesting because we're producing, as the United States, we're producing more than we ever have. We have a little bit more inventory right now than we do historically at this point of the year. We will see pump prices pick up, and we'll probably breach $3 sometime in the next month or so at the pump. Some of that is the fact that crude oil is a little bit higher. OPEC has actually stuck to their guns. They have said we're going to cut production, and they have actually done that. The second part of it is the normal seasonal change to the summer blend. So you have a lot of the refineries shut down right now, and they're not producing as much oil as they transition over to the summer blend. For drivers, the good news is that May tends to be the peak in oil prices. When you take a look at it over a year-over-year basis, early May, Memorial Weekend, tends to be the peak, and it kind of tails off after that. So I would anticipate that we'll see $3 at the pump fairly soon. And again, that'll bleed through to the CPI numbers, inflation data, and everything else. Won't touch the core, but it certainly will hit the headline numbers. So something to keep an eye on in the months ahead.
Paul's SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. He's a regular guest here on Friday. We normally talk about the economy and portfolios. Thought we'd open up in the second half of today's broadcast to take some of your questions. Paul, you ready to hit the phones?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's give it a shot.
Let's see. This is a text message from the 815 area code. Please ask Paul to discuss Treasury notes as a safe small income stream for retirement for those of us about to retire, will it keep up with inflation, keep up with inflation?
It's going to be close. Usually fixed income is geared to, or the rates are tied off of inflation, and usually there's a little bit of a premium to inflation. So if inflation is running at 2%, treasuries are going to give you maybe 2.25%, 2.5%. So there's not much room in there for that. One of the things, though, too, depending on how long you hold those treasuries, if you buy a 5-year treasury or a 10-year treasury, inflation can obviously change a lot over the course of that time, and you're not going to get compensated for that. You've locked in whatever that income stream is. So what we generally try to recommend for clients when we're talking about individual bonds is we ladder them out. So we'll have something coming due a year from now, 2 years from now, three, and so on. So that when the bond matures, I now have the ability to go out in the marketplace and get whatever the rates are. So if rates go up, I can buy a higher income stream. If rates go down, I have locked in a nice income stream and with my other bonds.
Oh, that you just made a good argument for having a financial planner on your side, right?
That's exactly what we try to do, yes.
This is a question from the 815. Good morning, Paul. I have my 401k in the most aggressive stock plan I can get. I was thinking about going to a less risky around December against rumors of recession. Is this a good plan, good game plan?
Yeah. You know, the rumors of recession are going to be with us for a while, and whether we get one or not is still up for debate, and we won't know it until we get there. So I think to wait and say, okay, I'm going to wait until December or some fixed point in the future and say, okay, I'm going to get less aggressive at that point. I think what you want to do, because there are signs, at least certainly in our mind, that the recession is possible within the next 18 months or so, I would take a little bit of money off the table at this point. And instead of dollar cost averaging your way into the market as you would with a 401k, maybe take your contributions and take a little bit of your the money that's in those aggressive funds and move it to a bond fund or cash money market. You don't have to do it all at once. It's not an all or nothing decision, but gradually, if you're 100% in the stock fund, maybe with the idea that you're going to target a 60-40 mix, 60% in the aggressive fund, over the next couple months, take 5% or so out. And so by December, you're at that 60-40 level. Because, again, we don't know what's going to happen. And the markets may continue to do very well. Historically, they do very well from the time that the yield curve inverts until we get to actually recession. So there may still be some good upside to the market here, but it'd be a good time to take a little bit of money off the table.
Yeah, I think a lot of us looked at our 401ks in December and had some scary thoughts. But we've made a lot of that back, though, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of our accounts are at or above where they were in September. So, again, we've made back, and most people that are in 401k plans, certainly with the contributions that they made over the course of October, November, and December when things were terrible, made that all back again. And so they should be looking pretty good now versus certainly December. But even relative to the peak back in September, those 401ks look pretty good here.
Here's another one from 773. Good recent returns in value line, mid-cap, and larger CO-focused fund. Should they be rebalanced? If so, how to rebalance and when to prevent any losses? Sounds like the magic eight ball here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Check again later. But it is always a good idea to rebalance, and things do get out of line because large companies, and certainly the mid-stocks, have done very well as the markets have recovered over the last 3-4 months. So you get out of whack with where you should be as far as an allocation goes. What you would like to do is determine how often do you want to rebalance and stick to that plan. So I want to rebalance on a monthly basis, quarterly basis, whatever it is, and try not to guess what the markets are going to do. That's part of the idea behind rebalancing is you take the emotion out of it and not have to worry about, okay, the markets are here today, I should rebalance, or, oh my gosh, the markets have fallen 5%, I got to sell everything and worry that it might go down more. So you want to have a regular schedule of doing that rebalance. as opposed to trying to time the market. But it makes a lot of sense to rebalance those portfolios.
A couple of texters this morning want to make sure that you know that gas has already hit $3 in a few places.
And it, depending on where you're at, I can understand that.
Suburbs,
I'm out in the burbs, and we don't have the Cook County tax, so we're just slightly below that. We're probably about $2.85 right now, the last time I filled up a week or so ago. So sorry about that. We can be $3.25 certainly, but $3 I think is an easy call.
I think as punishment you should stop at a city gas station on your way home.
I try to avoid it.
Paul, I wanted to talk to you about some other things you may like here at the end of the week. We saw Boeing yesterday impact what happened with stocks on the Dow. Boeing is up this morning again, but they announced late last night. There was a story late last night that they found a second software problem on the 737 MAX that they're dealing with. At least they're acknowledging it. I know the Boeing CEO's acknowledged that they're trying to fix this. Is Boeing still a stock that you would recommend?
You know, it's one that we have owned in the past. We don't own it today. And one that we sold probably about a year or so ago. With all of this swirling around right now, there's a lot of question as to how it's going to get resolved and what the impact is going to be on Boeing over the long run. The good news from Boeing's perspective is it's them and Airbus in this space. So if you're going to buy a plane, there's only a couple of companies you're going to be able to buy it from. They do have a huge backlog of orders that they're still working on. The company is not going out of business because of this. But it's going to create some opportunities. Right now, I'd sit on the sidelines and wait for some more resolution to this, because we're just starting to see a lot more news items, and you've highlighted a couple that can have an impact on the stock price. I think Boeing is going to be under a cloud for a while, and it might be something to revisit maybe during the summertime and take a look at it. And you might, the stock price could very well be 5 to 10% higher. And you say, well, geez, I could have bought it much cheaper in the spring. But at least some of those questions get removed. And now you're looking at a viable company going forward that's going to generate some really good cash flow and earnings as well as dividends.
We have about a minute or so left. Let's squeeze in one more. Jay up in Kenosha wants to improve their credit score. I'm interested in improving my credit score, pay bills on time, period. What other advice is available? So it sounds like he's a guy that pays his bills on time and just wants a better credit score.
Yeah, I mean, really take a look at what kind of credit cards you have, what kind of credit you have outstanding, and try to get that cleaned up. So certainly if you've got a lot of student loans, you've got a lot of credit card debt, you're making payments as opposed to cleaning those up, your credit score will improve as you get those bills under control. So the fact that you may have a $10,000 credit card bill and I'm making $300 a month payments on it, that's going to hurt your overall credit score. And how much of that credit card or credit cards do you have outstanding versus total available? So if you really kind of maxed out your credit card, to get additional credit or to look for additional ways to get money becomes very difficult. So I'm working with a few clients now where we're trying to restructure some of their debt so they can make the payments and get ahead of some of their debt. But really, once you get that under control, the credit cards need to kind of go away for a little while. And what we recommend actually for clients is give yourself an allowance. Take cash. Don't use the debit card. So when you go to Starbucks, you go, you know, out on a Friday night, pay with cash. And when that money is gone, it's gone. That's kind of how that works. So because the debit card gets to be troublesome, or the credit card too. It's not real money. It's just a swipe and you're done. If you got to pull out a couple 20s, it's real money.
All right, Paul. How can people have a conversation with you one-on-one if they want?
They want to drop me a note. I'd be happy to start that conversation at pnolte@kingsviewam.com and be happy to respond and chat with them.
All right. We'll see you again next week. Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
Have a great weekend. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, where he's SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning, up nearly 0.25% on the NASDAQ, nearly that on the S&P, up nearly 29 points on the Dow this morning. Let's check in on agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. And looking at the overnight grain trade at the Chicago Board of Trade, prices are lower so far. The July wheat contract down 6 cents a bushel. July corn down 2.25 cents a bushel. July soybeans are down 6 cents a bushel in the overnight grain trade. Looking back to yesterday in a livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, we just keep on getting an increase in the amount of African swine fever in China. Concerns that it will spread to other countries in the world, and indeed it has already. But as a result, yesterday, once again, we saw the June lean hog contract up the $3 daily limit. The agriculture ministry in China reporting two new outbreaks of the African swine fever on Friday. And I've mentioned, of course, the importance of pork production in China. And somebody said, really, do they have more hogs than we do? Yes, far and away, more hogs in China. And they not only produce more pork, they consume more pork than any country in the world. And so we do have to continue to keep an eye on that African swine fever. And a sticking point in the trade negotiations in China, focusing now on China's lengthy approval process for genetically modified crops. Still a major sticking point in talks to end that trade war between China and the United States, Steve.
Yeah, and so it feels like we've got another, the message today is they're getting close to the text, agreeing on the text of a trade agreement, so that's something new that we haven't heard.
That's true, it is. But now there's another trade agreement that's in the wings, and Congress just hasn't done anything on the, what I call NAFTA 2, the trade agreement between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And now the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, is saying that changes need to be made to the text of that agreement to ensure that its labor provisions could be enforced. Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland yesterday cautioned against the idea of reopening a new continental trade agreement with the U.S. and Mexico, saying it could be a Pandora's box. We've been waiting, Steve, for nearly a year to get Congress to approve the text of the agreement that had been hammered out months ago.
Yeah, so again, Congress, shaking her fingers at Congress here this morning. Orion, what is on the morning show tomorrow?
On the morning show tomorrow, Max is going to be doing the entire program, so he'll be talking markets with his market guest, and I'm sure taking an ongoing look at what's going to happen to spring planting with the continual situation of high water in some areas. And I think about 1 million acres of farmland have now been said to be in a big water situation that could delay planting. So he'll be talking about that and a lot of other things as well.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Again, the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 with Max Armstrong this week, right here on 720 WGN. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, April the 5th, jobs and unemployment report for March leads off this morning. Economists forecasting 180,000 new jobs, bouncing back from February's anemic 20,000. The experts see the unemployment rate remaining at 3.8%. February's consumer credit figures will be out today as well. Analysts see consumer credit increasing by about $17 billion. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, April the 5th.